Let's try to get some insight on what's really happening when we hear of black men killed by police. Stories of such confrontations have filled the news in recent months.
Eric Garner died in a police chokehold in New York.
Police shot Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri.
An officer shot John Crawford at a Walmart in Ohio. These events, though tragic and compelling, are anecdotes. They create certain perceptions.
And so this morning we'll add some data, some context. Gene Demby of NPR's Code Switch team has been looking for some of the realities behind police encounters and our response to them. Hi, Gene.
Good morning, Steve.
So I guess we should first ask, are these kinds of encounters happening more often, or do we just hear about them more often than in the past?
We don't really know how many people die in police encounters every year. There are thousands of police departments across the country. They all count the stats different ways. We don't know how they count justifiable and unjustifiable killings. But the Justice Department estimates there are about 400 killings every year.
400 killings of civilians by police every year. And I guess we should clarify, that's black, white, any race at all?
That's right. In fact, just in August, there was a man in Utah, a white man, who was killed by a black police officer there.
Okay, so 400 in a year, which means what?
So about 400 killings a year, but there have been police killings for a long time. What's probably changed is there's more technology. There are cameras everywhere. There are cameras in cell phones, in police vans, in surveillance videos. So now, thanks to technology, there may be a witness on the scene who can record that confrontation and spread it on social media. I spoke to Laura Castaneda, who's a journalism professor at USC. She said that social media and technology are major drivers for these stories.
What you would always see in these cases in past decades was people after the fact, right? Maybe
sure.
Some bruises or maybe a report. Reports of the injuries they sustained. But yes, of course, you know, picture paints a thousand words, right? The old cliche, now you see it. And these are very powerful, powerful images.
Well, let's think that through for a minute. Maybe we should say the key here is video. Many people will remember the Rodney King beating in the 1990s before there was social media, but there was video and that became a huge story.
So video certainly matters here, but social media allows these stories to become bigger, right? People can spread these videos on social media. We know that on Twitter, there's a disproportionate presence of people of color, right? And so you're getting different experiences that are being captured, but also different experiences that are being magnified by the megaphone that is Twitter.
So are social media forcing traditional media to cover stories they might otherwise have overlooked?
That's almost certainly true. I mean, in 2012, there was the Trayvon Martin shooting, which got traction because of the hashtag movement around it.
Yeah, not a police shooting, but an unarmed black man who was killed.
Sure, right. And that story gained traction because of social media. The same thing happened in the Eric Garner killing in New York earlier this year. In the Michael Brown killing, it turned out that someone was actually tweeting that entire encounter. And we found out after the protest started that the tweets were out there.
So there's a change in the media environment. It's more open. It's more free. Is there also a political change in the country that's driving the increased attention to these kinds of encounters?
There may be. There was a poll by the Pew Research Center done right after the Brown shooting that found that a majority of respondents did not feel that police treated people from different racial groups equally. Although people did think that their local police departments were fair, they did not feel that way about police nationally.
Hmm.
So I spoke with Vikrant Reddy, who's from a conservative group called Right on Crime, which is sort of rethinking our approach to policing and criminal justice. And he said that Americans are growing less tolerant of police using force.
There was a time that Willie Horton and Bernie Goetz and Time magazine covers about how New York City was ungovernable just dominated the headlines. We had entire presidential elections that were decided based on criminal justice issues.
Mm.
And you had conservative politicians come forward and say, liberals are not taking this problem seriously. We will take it seriously. We will start locking people up. And I would argue that they were right about that. But it's also true that that pendulum can swing too far. And at a certain point, it gets very counterproductive. And that's the era we live in now.
So what may be different now is that crime is lower and some places at record lows. People feel much safer and people may feel that they have space to think critically about how the police do their job now.
Okay, so bottom line, we don't really know if police shootings are any worse than they used to be. The stats just are not good enough. But it seems clear that there is more attention in different ways and new attitudes. Now, are police responding to those new attitudes?
Some departments are. Some departments, including in Ferguson, Missouri, are talking about having police wear forward-facing cameras to capture these encounters with civilians. There was a police department in Rialto, California, in which officers wore body cameras for a year. They found that police complaints dropped by almost 90% and police use of force dropped by about 60%. So at least an irony here, right? Video cameras drove these stories in the first place, but now it's hoped that even more cameras might prevent them from happening.
Gene, thanks very much.
Thanks so much, Steve.
That's NPR's Gene Demby of our Code Switch team.